Being a New Yorker, were you ever frustrated by the pace of travel in and around Venice, or did you adjust to it?
The one thing you notice when you live in Venice is that, obviously, there are no cars. You have to walk a lot. You can take a Vaporetto, but in some instances, you can get faster by foot to a place you're going to than by Vaporetto. And the thing is that in New York, if I'm late, I can grab a taxi and rush to where I'm going. That can't happen in Venice. If you set out to go somewhere, you know you can't get there before 18 minutes. Even if you go the fastest way, there's no way to speed things up. And that makes life more predictable and more unpredictable, too, because you have to walk on foot and you encounter things you don't expect. But it is a city where you just, if you start out late, you are going to be late. There's no way you can make up for lost time.
One of the more interesting characters we encounter in the book is Mario Moro. Could you explain his significance?
Mario Moro is a very important character in my mind because one day he wears the Vaporetto conductor's outfit, the next day he's a fireman, the next day he's a soldier, the next day he's an admiral. The significance is that he's acting and that Venice is a stage set and people create their own lives. They live their own dramas on this stage set. And because the place looks so much like a theater all over, people sort of are encouraged to dream a little bit. This man is performing. He's making up his own identity. And to me, that's what Venice encourages in people who live there, I think. Also, the cover of the book is one of the arcades in Piazza San Marco, St. Mark's Square. And it's just an arch and an awning coming down. But it looks like a stage. It looks like a theatrical stage. And to me, the cover photograph represents the theatricality of the look of Venice. You would think it's a stage if you take a quick look. But in fact, it's just an arch and an awning halfway down.
Tell us a little about the incredible experience of meeting master glassblower Archimede Seguso and getting to watch him work on his collection representing the Fenice fire.
Well, it's remarkable. To be in the furnace room of a great glass-blowing factory is quite an experience by itself, even when there's nobody working. But you've seen photographs of glass blowers, but when you're in an actual furnace room, the temperature is quite something. It's quite an experience to be in such a hot place, and the noise is deafening. You really can't hear anything. If somebody's standing right next to you, you can't hear because of the howling furnaces. You have a great respect for these technicians, these artisans who can create very precise replicas of glasses. I mean, if you're going to do a set of 12 wine glasses, they all have to be exactly the same size and shape and everything. And these men can do it.
But also what struck me is the image of the fire in the furnace room as it relates to the events at the Fenice.
That's why I loved the idea of Archimede Seguso, because here he was looking from his window into the furnace of the Fenice, and then he went and he made all of these vases and bowls based on the colors and the shapes and from the fire. To me, it was just perfect.
John, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Been a pleasure.
This is Holter Graham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The City of Falling Angels by John Berendt. This program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Executive producer, Sherry Huber. Text copyright 2005 by Highwater Incorporated. Production copyright 2005, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.